Well, I was driving into work this morning to record our weekly Right Angles, and it occurred to me, you know what, Bill? You very likely are the luckiest guy in the world. And if you're listening to the show, chances are pretty good that you're the luckiest guy or gal in the world, too. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle here with Steve Green and Scott Ott. And, gentlemen, here's how this story did its meandering pathway here. Before we recorded the show today, we record these on Tuesday mornings, Scott had sent out a video of what he said was a very unorthodox recording of The Sultans of Swing by Dire Straits, which is one of my all-time favorite songs ever. And as you can see from this little clip here without the music, because we don't want the violation, the copyright violation, it was an interesting way to sing Sultan of Swing, because nothing screams like rock and roll, axe god, like a couple of Orthodox Jews playing Sultans of Swing out on the sidewalk. However, I like listening to the song so much that it got me thinking, well, I want to hear Sultans of Swing again. So I played Sultans of Swing, and I said, that is superb music. And it took me back to when I was in college in 79, actually, when every single room in the entire dormitory was just blasting out Sultans of Swing. And I thought, I grew up in a time of amazing music. Hmm. I grew up in a time when I didn't have to have social media because it hadn't existed yet. But I grew up in a time when I could have social media, but I wasn't dependent on it. I grew up in a time before we had the answers to things like, what does Pluto look like or what does Saturn look like? But I got to live long enough to see what these things actually do look like. I realized that growing up in America at the time I grew up in makes me the luckiest guy in the world. I mean, when you think about the unlikeliness of it, just the sheer mathematical unlikeliness of it, and I'm not talking about my life, folks. I'm talking about our lives, all of our lives together, if you're watching this. It's enough to almost knock you off your feet. Steve, just for the sake of the obvious, this is the first generation, we are the first generation in history to never be hungry, never be cold, and never to be in pain for anything longer than the length of time it took to get you to a hospital. I'm talking about Americans that grew up in our time period here in the United States. It's astonishing.
I'm so glad somebody finally put it that way. There are so many things you mentioned that I'd like to just touch on in maybe a little more detail. I was in second or third grade, and I had been just so into space from the moment when I was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years old, when it really sunk in that we had walked on the moon. And Neil Armstrong set that first footprint when I was 2 months old. So obviously I wasn't aware of it at the time. But so I missed that. But I was there for the Viking probes to land on Mars. Mm-hmm. I was there for the Voyager flybys. I was there for the space shuttle, the first space shuttle launch. Of course, that turned out to be, you know, a whole bunch of nothing in the end. And then, almost miracle of miracles, I really came of age. You know, I was in my 20s when you're out there having the most fun, causing the most trouble, and just really the best years of my life, certainly, during the 1990s, which has to be, if you lived in the West, the best decade in human existence, bar none. The Cold War wasn't just over. We had won. We were the last socioeconomic political system standing, right? There was none of this huge threat of war. Terrorism was something that happened in other countries. Washington even made some sense. You know, we had the Balanced Budget Act. Our spending was mostly in line with our income. The regulatory state had been, you know, beaten into submission by Reagan so well and to such great effect that even Bill Clinton said the era of big government is over. It was an astounding and amazing time to be alive. It was the time of irrational exuberance, except it wasn't. It was rational exuberance. We had everything going our way, Bill. And in the last 20 some odd years, it seems like we've lost track. We forgot how to make all that stuff work. And
but let me just redirect you for a second.
Yeah, please.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you. My point is, I think we're the luckiest people in the world right now.
Yes.
Right now. For example, Steve, you can get into as much detail about this as you want to, but we've been doing this show for nigh on almost 20 years now, pushing it, 15 certainly. And there was a period of time when you were really quite sick during that interval when we were all working together.
Oh, yeah.
Quite sick. And if you had been that sick 20 or 30 years older, earlier, we'd probably be talking with Zoe Rachel right now in this. Yeah.
I was sick, but I wasn't that sick. I had Graves' disease, which is hyperthyroid, which is actually, it's been treatable for a very long time. And what they do in my case, I had it twice, believe it or not. The first time, they wanted to nuke my thyroid, where you take a radioactive pill. It's about equivalent to a chest X-ray. But
nuke your thyroid.
Yeah, it's radioactive iodine. And iodine collects in your thyroid gland.
Mm-hmm.
So this stuff just gets in there, and over a period of weeks, your thyroid gland dies off and just gets flushed out of your system. It's amazing. Then you got to take Synthroid the rest of your life. Big whoop. One pill in the morning, you're set for life, which is a miracle in and of itself. And the only reason I had this stupid disease twice is the first time, there weren't any doses available. So they had to put me on the pills. And once you're on the pills, you can't take the dose because your thyroid isn't all hyper enough to absorb enough of the iodine to make it work. So I had to go into I went into remission, and then I had to come out of remission. And this is what you guys remember. It took a year. It took a year for me to come out of remission, where every day was just a little bit worse than the day before. And that starts to wear on you. But Bill, you talk about living in the best time ever. You go to the hospital, you take the pill, and within days, that progress into hell stops. And within days after that, you start getting back to your normal self from taking a pill.
Yeah, and you are talking about a procedure, and you are not the son of a potentate.
No,
you know, you're not like the priesthood or the royalty of this culture, and you were preparing for a procedure where radioactive materials were administered to you with such a degree of precision that they were going to deactivate an organ or a gland that was malfunctioning in your throat. I mean, this is inconceivable for people who have had sicknesses throughout the course of our entire species.
Let me tell you a similar story. I'll keep this very brief because I know you want to move on to Scott here. But
I'm having fun. This one's a fun one.
And the thing is, my wife and I and our children, knock on wood, thank God, all of that stuff, are generally very, very healthy. But when Melissa was pregnant with our second child, Nate, she had a very, very good OBGYN, Dr. Cassidy, who just, you know, while she's doing the sonogram, likes to check out some other things around, you know, in the girly areas, just because she's there, she's a good doctor, she's concerned, and she notices a dark spot. And it turns out Melissa had an ovarian cyst. And so after Nate was born, that ovary had to come out, you know, before that turned septic or something. And of course, they do all this stuff orthoscopically. They didn't have to make any huge incision. If she's got any scars on her, I can't see them. And, you know, I look at my wife a lot. She's pretty. And so they did all this miracle surgery. She was back gardening within 3 days. I mean, right? She was back gardening, doing backbreaking labor within 3 days of this surgery that happened because her doctor had this little magical sonic thing.
Magic wand.
She decided, you know what? I've seen the baby. Let's see what's going on with Melissa.
My dad had kidney surgery several times, and looking back on it, the size of his scars, just looked like they operated on him with an axe.
Yeah. My dad had his appendix out.
It went from the front of his body all the way around to the back, and the stitches were like the kind of things you'd see on a football, you know?
Shoelace stitches. Huge scar from that appendix thing.
So Scott, you sent us this video of Sultans of Swing, and so I had to go listen to Sultans of Swing, and then when I was on YouTube poking around listening for Sultans of Swing, I found something that is, it's almost the antidote to all the negative things you see on YouTube. There's an entire subgenre of videos out there where young people listen to music that they've never heard before.
Yes, I love that.
And I listened to this family of these five young black men listening to Sultans of Swing for the first time. It's a reaction video.
Yeah.
And these guys are going, this is fantastic. And I'm going, yeah, it really is. It really is fantastic.
Ain't no trumpet playing band.
No, they're not. And we grew up in this time. We grew up with this music and all of these wonders. And I don't know. I mean, it's nice to be grateful and thankful for things other than on the fourth Thursday of November, you know? it's nice just to wake up and realize that even if the worst thing in the world is happening to you right now, right? Even if you've got a terminal disease right now, I'm not trying to be flip about this, but if you've got a terminal disease right now, this is the luckiest time to ever have a terminal disease in the history of the world.
Yeah.
And that needs to be said, especially coming off of your episode where we were talking about, you know, finding a way to remain in control of your emotions and not fall into these pits of sadness and despair.
One of the great benefits of being raised by your grandparents, as I was, is that you get to see a perspective from kind of a hop back a generation, you know, that you're not getting it directly from your parents. And it's not, you get to see them day to day and how they cope and how they deal with things. And I just, while you were introducing this topic, I thought, you know, my grandfather from about the age of 5 was working on the family dairy farm. They were getting up at 4:30 in the morning. His dad used to stand at the foot of the stairs and yell up to all the children. There were a bunch of them. He would yell upstairs, "Are you people going to sleep all day?" And they would come down, you know, they'd get dressed and they'd go out to the barns and they'd take care of the cattle and all that kind of stuff. The reason why my grandfather, as a child, was working on a farm was because his family needed every hand, including child labor, in order to make it happen, in order to survive financially as a family. Now, when I was a young man, not even a man, when I was a boy, I worked on a hog farm that also had some calves and chickens and a variety of other things. And I was working on that farm, not as many hours and not as early in the morning, but I was taking the money I got from that and using it eventually to buy a used car. Did my family need a used car? They did not. It was nothing but a burden to my grandparents, actually, because occasionally I would come on bended knee pleading for more money for the used car to fund its needs. But I literally worked on a farm in order to fund my fun, my recreation, my enjoyment of life.
Made your own luck.
Yeah, but he had to work on a farm because his family needed it for food. Like, they needed it to survive. And just that's the contrast. If you have a little bit of historical perspective, you don't have to be a master of history, just a little bit of historical perspective, you come to understand that, like Bill says, we are truly living in the most phenomenal time that has ever existed. When you talk about Mark Knopfler and Dire Straits, I mean, think about this. Performers like Mark Knopfler used to only be able to get money if the king or the duke was willing to pay them to be like the entertainment at court. Yeah. Now, people like Mark Knopfler make lots of money. They make more money than any of the kings had back then, and they make it from the commoners. People like me who buy their records and go to their concerts and stuff like that. So it's just a complete reversal of historical precedent. And I was just thinking, within the last 24 hours, I found out that my other employer is going to give me access to this new artificial intelligence gizmo that will allow me to develop software with the help of these large language models and do so in a faster, more efficient way. I watched a rocket be launched this morning. I have a car in my driveway, even though my wife took a car to work. We have two cars. It's not uncommon in this country. I can see, I have access to all information practically in human history at my fingertips whenever I want it. It's just unbelievable. And I see some people go, "Well, yeah, this country's gone to hell in a handbasket." It's like, well, that's a way to look at it. It's not the only way to look at it, though. And I think sometimes some of us feel like if we don't look at it that way, well, then it's going to go to hell in a handbasket faster. But I would suggest that maybe we want to try the experiment of saying, maybe these are phenomenal times, and maybe we are blessed beyond measure, and maybe we should share that sense of enthusiasm and abundance with other people in order to multiply that sense in our lives. And maybe by that very act of engaging with your neighbors and friends and family members and people in other countries even, and in a way to reflect the blessing you're receiving onto them, maybe everything gets better and better as it goes, instead of just choosing to focus on one small area of life that doesn't seem to be going the way you like it and make it seem like that's everything.
One of the things that I found out, I got married very late in life, 56. And
1956. Holy cow.
It was 1956 when I got married. Yeah. I was born in 630 AD and I'm an immortal and I'll be here long after you guys are gone. I've done shows like this with literally thousands of people over the course of generations.
Originally on stone tablets.
You're the Scott Ott type and I have a Steve Green type. That's and I will in another 40 or 50 years when I relocate and do this all over again. But one of the things about being married is you get to learn a lot about yourself from somebody who sees you from the outside and presumably loves you enough to let you know where you're a little off base without it, you know, bringing out the claws and the fangs. So otherwise, if people are trying to tell you what's wrong with you, the world can get very red in teeth and claw very quickly. but in any event, what you learn is that there are aspects to things that you don't see. And I had been trying to understand what it is about the when I'm generalizing about Gen Z, what it is about them that bothers me so much. And I realized what bothers me about them is that I feel profoundly sorry for them. And I don't mean pity them from up above looking down on them like you poor, miserable, low-life swine. I mean, like, I genuinely feel sorry for them that they didn't get to have a chance to have the kind of personal experiences that we had with real friends in real time. I feel sorry for them that they never got to build model airplanes and fly them around down the street, because that is a different experience than playing a photorealistic video game version of it. It's a completely different experience. I feel like they've been deprived of so much. They've been deprived of being able to be hurt. They've been deprived of being able to face the world knowing that you can be hurt and still go on out there and have it not be the end of the world. I feel sorry for them because their connections are all through a little tiny little window this big. And I would like to bring them some of the things that we were so fortunate to have gotten. But from the sheer mathematical uncertainty of it all, it's just the sheer mathematical rarity of being born an American in the 20th and 21st century compared to everything that's happened to this as a species. It's enough to just knock you off your perch, really. And that's what I was hoping to accomplish with this episode today, was I was hoping you could just take a moment when this thing is over and just sit around and be knocked off your perch, because ultimately what's going on right this second is three of the most regular guys there are able to talk to you and actually make a living doing it. It's not a crazy, amazingly great living, but it's a damn better living. I haven't been to work in 20 years, and neither have we when it comes to this kind of thing. So we live in a world now where people can just plain talk to each other and other people can listen to each other. And Scott is constantly talking about how he'll be selling furniture and somebody will come in and say, I'm just such a big fan of yours. I watch all the right angles you do. It's an age of miracles. And Scott's point, I think, is probably the most important point of all. We make our own luck, and we also make our own destiny. If we believe we're going to fail, we're going to fail. If we believe we're going to succeed, we're going to succeed. It would do all of us a lot of good to sit back and recognize that the things that we see damaging the things that we love are, in fact, damaging the things that we love, but that the things that we love are so unimaginably strong that they can take a licking and keep on ticking, and they can come back again if we decide to bring them back again. And that's what this one's all about today. So thanks very much for joining us. Thanks for being part of my insanely lucky life. Not only all of you watching, but you two clowns as well, until I get a new set another couple hundred years from now. You guys have worked out real well, pretty well. I give you above average marks. So for the Steve Green archetype and the Scott Ott archetype, I'm Bill Whittle, and we'll see you next time right here on Right Angle.